Yeah. Write that down quickly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's getting edited out. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the next stage. I'm Toby Vince, and I will be your host for this edition of the next stage. Today, we have on Sean and Fred from Fishing for Chips, who are one of our companies participating in our Edinburgh Fringe specials. They are providing a piece of a new immersive theatre called Burning Down the Horse. It's comedy and is situated around the classic Greek myth of the Trojan horse. It's an incredible show. We got to speak to them both about it, as well as a few other things. It promises to be a great episode. Stick around, take a listen. Hi everybody, welcome back to the next stage. So for this episode of the Edinburgh Fringe special, we are joined by the guys from Fishing for Chips, who are doing Burning Down the Horse. Hello.
Hello.
How are you all today? All good?
Yeah, not too bad at all.
Yeah, very good, very good. So just briefly introduce yourselves for our listeners. Who are we speaking to?
So I'm Sean. I'm one of the co-artistic directors of Fishing for Chips. And one of the co-writers of Burning Down the Horse.
I'm Freddie, and I'm the exact same, actually. Yeah. Ditto, I'd say, on that one.
Wonderful stuff. Let's dive deep into it. So this is a question that it's one we're asking all of our companies that we've got on for this series, and we just want to start with it just as a nice, easy way to get into the series. So for you guys over at Fishing for Chips, what does Fringe Theatre mean to you?
I think for us it's opportunity, I think, because anyone can put on a fringe theatre show, and it's not easy, but if you have that drive, it's probably the easiest way to get something on of your own. And we've been lucky enough to get those opportunities, and one of those most important things is the fringe to do that.
I think it just creates, it's an opportunity to, I mean, it's really expensive to do it all, but it's expensive to put on a show anywhere. But I think the amount of exposure you get, the amount of people you meet, the amount of opportunity that comes from it, it almost makes it worth losing all your money for like an incredible experience. And I think it's just, it is that opportunity. And it's a shame because, you know, with the way the world is at the moment, it's becoming even harder, which is really a real shame. And we're certainly feeling that. So a lot of other people will as well. But you know, I think it still has that kind of, I guess it is that opportunity that was there. The reason it was set up, I think, is to, you know, create a name for yourself or start something new. So I think that's what we view it as.
Yeah, for sure. And I totally get what you mean about the expense of creating theatre, especially right now. I think it's often quite an illusion that making theatre can be quite cheap. Well, if you think about it, like, you, there's an awful lot of stuff that goes into making like a piece. It's not just about sourcing people. It's where are we performing, what we're wearing, how long we got it for, you know, any legal shit, you know?
Yeah. Legal honestly, shit really gets you down.
Legal shit
you forget.
Really does get you down, honestly.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a lot of stuff. And with Fringe Theatre especially, I think, like, it asks you to sort of think a little bit differently with how you approach theatre, just because there's like, okay, so let's look from like a space perspective. You know, there's more often than not, you're not in like your traditional theatre venues. So you've got to think a little bit more laterally about how your work will adjust to that venue. And honestly, how that can incur a bit of a cost sometimes, you know?
Yeah, I think also with that, because it's fringe theatre, there's a lot more leniency in how you can do it. And you have a lot more free rein. I mean, you go up to the end of a fringe, there is some extremely quirky shows that just wouldn't get off the ground anywhere. But you have that audience who've gone specifically to see theatre or comedy or whatever, and they are almost a captive audience up in Edinburgh because, you know, you're here for one reason, unless, of course, you are from Edinburgh and you don't particularly enjoy the fringe. But for us, it's just that opportunity to try stuff out, I guess. So although there's that risk, you know that it's Fringe Theatre, you know you have 5 minutes to set everything up, so you can sort of cut corners if you have to.
And
it's much cheaper than doing a full-scale run in a, say, a London theatre where you have to then create your own audience as well.
Yeah, that's so true. I think, that again, the allure of Edinburgh was that everyone's there because they want to see theatre. And you feel like when you put on a show in London, I mean, I know we're feeling it with our previews. It's like, gosh, how do we get people to, after work, come all the way out to, you know, an area of London and come and see our, even an, take an hour out of their day to come and see our show for £15 or something like that. It's just really difficult. And even my best mates, you know, have to like drag them out. And it's just, it is difficult. And it's like, yeah, but I think Fringe gives you that opportunity to, you know, all these audiences want to see weird and wonderful things. And I think that's the great thing about it.
Oh, for sure. Let's delve a little bit into the piece then. So we'll just give a bit of context. Burning Down the Horse is a piece of immersive comedy that invites audiences into the famous Trojan horse on their way to siege Troy. Can you give us a bit of insight into the early stages of the project's development for us?
Well, the earliest stages was... So we did Fringe last year and we knew we wanted to come back. We did a week last year and the plan was to do 2 weeks this year.
Yep.
We were out walking my dog. Shout out to Teddy.
Yeah.
Hi, Teddy.
Should probably shout out to my other dogs as well.
Well, you know.
Wally, Inca and Poppy. and so, yeah, we were just walking it and we were just discussing ideas because we knew we wanted to write together.
Yeah.
And, you know, we like sort of one act continuous... Well, what's the word we used it a lot?
Yeah, well, it's kind
real
of
time.
Real time. One setting as
well. Yeah, so we then thought, well, what would be a good place to do that? And, you know, the Trojan horse is one of the most iconic sort of escape rooms of all time, really.
I think that's it. Sean actually worked in an escape room for a year, what was it, a couple of years ago? Yeah,
up in Manchester.
So in this, on a subconscious way, maybe that's why we it's kind of that.
And then... We wanted to push the boundaries, I guess. And so we've never done immersive stuff before, but we felt it just naturally lent itself to involving the audience because, you know, we can make any space look like the Trojan horse. And so we then brought it to a couple of people and we tried to think of a story that would suit us. And obviously the natural story of the Trojan horse is very good, it all goes well and success, but I guess we sort of thought when you look at it on paper it's sort of a very bad idea,
it's insane.
And so we sort of wanted to pursue that sort of idea, and then with that we found that it was quite prevalent to today's sort of
I think it was at the time when Liz Truss had just she just embarked on her 40 days. And we were kind of like, this is crazy.
Yes.
And I think, you know, you'll see parallels in the leadership and people just following the leader no matter what you're going to do, even something as crazy as sitting in a wooden horse for 3 days, being wheeled to certain doom.
And then we were lucky enough to be invited to the Pleasance Charlie Hartle Theatre Reserve.
Yes, we were.
Sort of previews, so... was us and 13 other shows doing a 10-minute slot up in Islington. Unfortunately, we didn't win the £10,000 investment. Some great shows did, though.
We'll never forget them.
Yeah, exactly. It probably was. But off the back of that, they then offered us a month at Pleasance Courtyard.
Oh, awesome. Which
we took probably too quickly. We were just very excited. We didn't really think about the ramifications of cost. But... We then decided, okay, well, we're going to put the effort in. We're going to take this seriously. So we've got quite a big team now assisting us, some great people that we've met through, you know, mutual friends.
Yeah.
And we're really excited.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, immersive theatre generally is such a... it's such a growing, like, industry and genre, especially in the theatre world. Just speaking as somebody who's, like, done it personally, it is quite honestly bizarre. Just not just as performer, but as participant, as maker, as whatever. Like there's so much stuff to do. I'll tell you a quick story. So when I was in university, we did a piece of we did immersive theatre as a genre, and I can't remember what the piece was about. To be honest, part of me thinks it was irrelevant. However, what I do remember is wheeling people through a theatre dressed as a priest, singing singing In the Bleak Midwinter four times a day for a week, and then essentially transporting people into what can only be described as like the Child Catcher's vehicle from Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, and then just trying to grab them with hands. And in a nutshell, that's what immersive theatre is, you know. Yeah. But like
a fever dream. Yeah.
But I mean it. But I don't mean that to ward people off. But I mean it in a sense of that it, you know, it can come in just about any form, and it's wacky in the best way possible, you know. So, yeah. But with that in mind, not necessarily my anecdote, but yours. like, why do you think it's become such a thing? Why are people so into immersive theatre right now?
I was trying to think about this, and I think for me, I was trying to think of why I was so interested in immersive theatre. And I think it's almost a way to, I think we live in a world where we're searching for, we have all these stories like virtual reality and stuff. You're kind of searching for the most real experience you can get. And in the theatre, there'll always be that kind of, I guess, a lens over it, so you always know, you know, I'm in the theatre. And I think immersive theatre is a way to kind of mix the two. So it's certainly that's what we're trying to do, is create a narrative and then have that kind of lived experience for the audience as well.
Yeah
I mean, when I was young, I think the concept of immersive theatre would have absolutely terrified me. I mean, I had to leave The Lion King when they were coming down the aisles.
Oh, yeah.
Because I didn't want to be, you know, I didn't want to be picked up and included. So I think spilling on from that, what we've tried to do now is, as Fred said, is it is a play. So there is a complete narrative going on, a character-driven narrative going on. Mm. But you just happen to be in the same space as that is going on. So it's not necessarily immersive. There's no movement. People aren't being dragged around. It's very much you're sat waiting for things to happen. And obviously, we're going to take measures so that people don't have to be included if they don't want to be.
Yeah.
You know, we want to be very sort of accessible and let people have a good time, enjoy the show, whether or not they want to be involved. And so our focus really is, I guess, actors, is more on that script, on the story that's going ahead. As well as making the audience feel like, well, this is actually something that could happen. So I think immersive is just that step up from watching a play, and it just makes you feel a lot more connected. And something that we're going to have to get used to is eye contact with the audience.
Yes.
it's going to be a... Because I don't think any of us as a cast have really done anything like this, but...
Yeah.
One of our, you know, director keeps saying, okay, well, you're telling each other, but you've got to open it up to the other 100 people in the audience.
Yeah.
Because there is no fourth wall anymore.
No.
So I think it just makes you feel like you're witnessing something special, and it's never going to be the same again.
Yeah. And I think also because of, you know, we don't have a lavish budget and we can't have a massive set and really create the feeling of it. So I think by making it immersive, you're almost, I don't know, taking away the fact that you haven't got a big set and you haven't got, you know, an authentic space to have it. And by saying, you know, you're all involved in it anyway, it kind of creates that, I don't know what the word is, but...
Bonhomie.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, why not? Bonhomie. Tip of my tongue, that one. But yeah.
Yeah, no, there's such a duty of care with making sure the audience feel as if, well, especially with immersive, especially because, again, as you mentioned, the fourth wall is either non-existent or a bit more shattered than in traditional theatre, right? So, you know, it's all about recognizing at least from my perspective, it's about recognizing, okay, who in this audience is going to help me get to where I want to go. That's the best way I can describe it. It's like there's no point in going to like an audience member who's like quite obviously a bit like, oh shit, why am I getting like sung at by a priest, you know? There's no point in doing that.
Yeah.
So it's like you gotta you've always got to think a bit more and a bit more like on your feet than traditional theatre, I would guess.
Yeah.
But it's definitely a much more like interesting experience for audiences as well, especially take into consideration like some of the more commercial stuff that's happening down in London right now. Immersive isn't just necessarily for theatre anymore.
No, you know.
You've got people who are going down to London and playing like Monopoly.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So it's such a thing that has really taken off, you know.
Mm. Yeah, no. I completely agree. Yeah.
So with all this in mind then, what would you say, like, so you've been talking a bit about, you've done some previews with the show. How have you sort of thought about accommodating like accommodating the narrative whilst making this a bit more interactive for audiences, would you say?
So I guess from our approach, it was we sort out the characters first. We like to write. I think secrets are very important when it comes to writing, especially with comedy. If someone's hiding something, it makes it so much more interesting. And I think pretty much every character in this show has something that they're, you know, keeping inside, and slowly all of these secrets are unfurled. All the
unveiled.
And so we sort of focused on that, and naturally it sort of came to pass that there would be audience interactions. So we've got, you know, occasionally people get up on stage, there's sides, and we have a pre-show where we're planting things with the audience that will then get paid off
later on,
an hour later. So yes, that's sort of what we love to do, is everything in the first act gets paid off in the second act.
Yeah.
And so involving the audience became almost a challenge to see where we could add it in, but also where it would feel natural. We didn't just want it to be just randomly getting people involved, but we found that getting people involved is more of a narrative thing than it is just an immersive thing.
Yeah, I think that was it. It was because the style we wanted to create was one of, like, this play could be a normal play. That's what we wanted it to do, but then we've decided to put it in an immersive setting anyway. So all the, I guess, immersion for the audience, as Sean says, progresses the narrative. It's not just there for the sake of it. To be like, oh, look, you know, we're immersive. Welcome to the horse. It's like, you know, you're almost a character in it. And I wanted the feel of anyone could stand up from that audience, give us something, and it would feel like it's pushing the narrative, whether that's, you know, we obviously know that's going to happen, but I didn't want the audience to feel like that. And I think a lot of the interactions will be quite improv heavy and quite fresh, but then we have little ways out of them. So the narrative pushes on anyway. Which I think is, you know, a lot of immersive shows do a similar thing.
Like, as you say before, giving like audience members like purpose.
Yeah.
You know, like it's very easy to sort of, well, okay, how should we phrase this? So you want audiences to feel as if they're their own little characters within this world. Is that correct?
Sure.
Yeah.
So by giving them something, be it like a simple object, right? Mm-hmm. You've essentially given audience license to develop character and thus like break down that initial awkwardness.
Yeah.
You know, of getting into the play, really. And and, you know, and again, comedy as well, generally, it's a great genre to go for when working with immersive and audience in general, because again, you it means that the audience feel a little bit more comfortable, you know? Whereas if, like, well, if the Trojan Horse was like some sort of drama, you know?
Yeah.
Like a sort of like, oh, I don't know, Odysseus has been murdered now. Who's done it? You know?
Yeah, like, yeah, we're not accusing anyone of murder.
No.
Quite extreme. But
quite extreme, yes.
Yeah, I think but... at least what we're trying to do is get people to feel like they're having an experience and that just things are happening around them, like they're not watching a show. So we do get people involved. We sort of embarrass some people, but people sort of, you know, it's a very silly show. So I hope people know that they're getting them. It's never hurtful. We're never insulting or unkind, but you know, as long as everyone's along for the ride, so to speak. They're in the horse.
Yes.
As long as everyone sort of invests in the world, that's really all we want, because the world that we've created is very different to any Trojan Horse story that you will have heard.
Oh, yeah.
Or any real world. It's very silly. But for us, it's playing it 100% straight.
Yeah,
almost Monty Python-esque.
It's interesting what you say about it not being a drama. I think you're right. If we did an immersive Trojan Horse drama, it would be very intense, because the point is they're all soldiers, and I think, you know, that going could to lead war. To people being overwhelmed. But you're right, through the lens of comedy, it creates that almost wink to the audience that's never there, but it's kind of unspoken. Which is what we, you know, I think people appreciate, and it just makes it easier to, it makes it more accessible, I feel like.
Yeah.
And you know, these characters, it's a drama for them, it's the most important moments of their lives, but for everyone in the audience, they have that safety of like, well, this is a play, this is a comedy.
Yeah.
And it's quite an interesting, I guess, juxtaposition a little bit.
We are going to take a quick break for now.
Yeah, yeah.
We will see you back in just a second.
Perfect. Okay.
And we're back. So we're with Fish of the Chips, still talking Burning Down the Horse, but we're going to go back a little bit. So you mentioned in the first half that this ain't your first rodeo at the Fringe.
No.
So last year you went to the Fringe with Tradition.
Yes.
Now, so I'll just give a bit of a brief synopsis for it. Tradition is a comedy farce that draws inspiration from classic musical Fiddler on the Roof. Talk us a little bit about that. What was your experience with that one? And how would you say that inaugural run affected the development of Burning Down the Horse for this time around?
Go on, Shawnee.
Yeah, so last year was a very fun year, very great experience. There were four of us doing the company. Two of them were at drama school. One was teacher training, and then I was doing escape rooms up in Manchester.
Living the dream.
So I'd written the show on my own. And we went up. We only did a week, but it was an intense experience.
Felt like a year, it really did.
We started rehearsing 3 days before our first performance. And so we learned predominantly to be a bit more prepared, and get all your, you know, ducks in a row, before you do anything. And
yeah.
So it was just this idea of collaboration. And I think we found out if you're not enjoying it, there's really no point in doing it, because as we say, Fringe is so expensive, chances are you're not going to be making millions of pounds. So if you don't enjoy what you're doing, there's really no point in doing it. So we've sort of kept that going through, and we try to keep an open line of communication now between everyone, because if you don't, you know, if we're not enjoying it, we can't expect other people to enjoy it. So as long as we're carrying that forward, and then also I guess we probably learned just give the big jobs to other people.
How so? Yeah. What do you mean by that?
Well, Freddie's afraid of admin.
I'm not afraid of admin. Admin doesn't agree with me.
Okay. Yes.
No, I would say the big thing is, I'm really proud of what we achieved last year, but a lot of stress came from the fact that we weren't really that prepared. And like we did so well as a group, and it really it really proved to us that this is what we wanted to do, and we wanted to move the company forward, which is really what we're doing this year. But it was a big wake-up call, and I think Sean's so right. I think because we weren't that prepared and we didn't have as good a team around us as we do now, it meant that a lot of stress seeped in, and it did kind of take away a little bit from the experience. And I think, you know, that was because it was the first time and we didn't really know the ins and outs of it all.
You sort of also get to learn that once you're up there, every single group, every theatre company is going through the exact same thing.
That's so true, yeah.
And, you know, you will meet people and you'll learn, and
that's
all it is. And we're even going forward, we're still making mistakes. We're not perfect, but it's the enjoyment that we're having now is still trumping any sort of issues we're having. And the amount of people we met and who again,
going up again,
we know that we've got sort of people to speak to and talk to. It makes it so much easier.
I would say embrace the mess would be the main thing we learned. It's that you can't control it. And the more you try and control it, the more out of control it will become. So just kind of go with it. And I genuinely think that's the best way to deal with it, really.
Oh, for sure. And like you say, it's all about just having fun at the end of it all, you know?
Exactly.
Because it's the classic saying, you know, people can tell if you're not enjoying yourself when making work, you know?
Yeah.
So, and you can't expect an audience to have like a slap bang time if you ain't having it yourself, you know?
No, I completely agree.
We do endeavor to give everyone a slap bang time.
Slap bang time, yes. Yeah. You can have that one. I'll let that be
over. Write that down. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's getting edited out.
Not if we keep mentioning it.
Is this going to be like a sort of bogey situation?
How many
slap bangs can we put into it?
Slap and a bang.
Yes. Yeah. So a bit back now to Burning Down the Horse. Mm-hmm. So another thing you mentioned was it's got its political undertones to it. Now, there's the whole argument that all theatre is political, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, how you stand on that is another long conversation. However, in this particular instance, you've said that you've drawn influence from the fabulous 40 Days of Liz Truss.
Oh, beautiful.
Yes, take that as you will. And it's sort of weaved its way into like how you go about the narrative a bit. So how would you say you've balanced like current UK politics and Trojan Horsemith and merged them together?
Question to answer.
I guess we never set out to write a political piece. It was never like
no, and
I don't think it's not, there's no like clear allegorical story, you know, the characters don't represent people or anything like that. It's just that I guess we sort of have a kind of anarchic streak in us. We you know,
just in our writing.
Yeah we're very good boys, we don't break any rules in real life. But I think it's hard not to discuss what's going on in the world because a lot of stuff's going on at the moment. And it just sort of emerged that we had this character who was abusing his power and forcing people and was unelected, and suddenly the parallels became
it was just there,
thicker. And it's not necessarily just about this current government, it's about any form of leadership. My sort of life motto is, nothing's going to change unless you actually do something. So it's sort of looking at that from a lens of, well, you can rant, rave and shout and scream, but one person on their own is not really going to do anything. It makes us sound a bit communist.
No, it doesn't.
But we're not.
You're not wrong. No, I think, it's the idea of, I guess, that classic, you know, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts. Absolutely is what we'd say. Yeah, there you go. Didn't prepare that. No. And yeah, I think we didn't set out to have, you know, to write it about the government at the time, but as you say, I think it's been at the forefront of all of our minds since. Yeah.
And you could watch this show and not see a political message.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not looking for it, you just see it as a story of a megalomaniac. But I think we tried to add a few moments of parallels, trying to get a message across. But for us, I guess it's, you've got to enjoy the show. If we were ramming a political bias down your throat, you know, that's not what we do. You can tell the undertones, because we set out to write a story of a man abusing his power, and that just happens to be going on in the world right now.
Everywhere. Yeah.
And we're not saying that this is going to change the world.
No.
If it does, great.
you can quote them. Yeah.
This could be the start of the revolution.
I think it's also important that when we set out to write it as well, we are very much also setting out to write a comedy that makes people laugh and actually doesn't have all these hidden secret messages. And, you know, I think that comes naturally because that's how people interpret anything, you know, and that's where those kind of subtexts can come from. But generally, at the end of the day, it was like, it's a fun myth. It's a great story. We're kind of inverting it slightly. And we just want people to go there, have fun, have a laugh and remember it, I think.
And by the time August comes around, it might not be relevant anymore.
you never know, you know?
Yeah.
Like, but I mean, it's interesting though. And especially with, I mean, just about anything, people don't like to be told how they should feel,
mm-hmm.
you know? Like, and I think that's, sort of the beauty in this genre, because you're given license to be like, okay, this is happening. How should I feel about this? You're not specifically being told, oh, I should be feeling a certain type of way.
That is definitely something we thought about when writing it. We were like, we could make audiences have one central figure that they're following. You know, he has a sides and he's the one who speaks to the audience, but it's an experience and we want people to come out of it having been affected in different ways, to find their own favorite character, follow the journey of that character if they want. We've got audience members and soldiers together. So the soldiers is in terms of actors. So we'll be within the audience. You could be sat next to an actor. Obviously, you'd know that because they're dressed as
a soldier.
It's not going to be a struggle.
Yeah,
with a sword and all of that. Yeah. But we definitely don't want people to come out of it going, oh, well, they just were lecturing me on power for an hour.
Yeah.
Power hour.
At the power hour.
Slappity
bang.
Slap bang power hour.
I didn't mind that.
Next year.
If we hadn't had the posters printed already, we would change it to the slap bang bow. But burning down the horse, we have to do.
Yeah.
God, we're going to get this episode flagged, you know.
Yeah.
No.
Excessive use of the term slap bang
power hour. Yeah. No. Okay. So before we get to the end, we have one quick thing for you. So, on the historical aspect of the show, hold on. I'm going to take a little bit of an educated stab that is quite loose on the historical stuff.
Well,
the loose side of loose.
We've taken the most iconic Greek hero of all time and turned him into a bit of a twat, really.
Yeah. Well, he's got to be, isn't he? When we were imagining it, we didn't do it. He's an anti-villain in a way, and also a horrible villain. But I think, I don't know, the way that Odysseus reads anyway is that he is a bit of a prick, I think.
Yeah. I mean, did you read the whole Odyssey for it?
Oh, twice.
Yeah.
That was an Odyssey. Well, I read it at university.
Yeah,
I studied English. I read it like I read all of my English texts on Spark Notes.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
But, and then we also, I think the main inspiration for us was Stephen Fry's Mythos.
Yes.
And our whole real, my attitude towards it was, if I don't understand the references or what's going on or the story, the general public won't. We don't want people to have studied ancient Greece.
I think so.
So
yeah.
We've got references to your favorite heroes that everyone knows, but we genuinely approach this of, well, no one actually knows what happened inside that horse. No one has actually gone in and, you know, no one even knows if there was a horse. So there's some artistic license in the fact that we've taken the story of a Trojan horse and sort of done what we want with it. But it's A to B. Everyone knows how it starts. Everyone knows how it ends. So we knew what the trajectory of the story was, that at the start they would enter the horse and at the end they would leave the horse and beat Troy. But what happens in the middle?
Yeah.
So we were, you're right to say it was very loose.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very loose. But a lot of the elements are the same, based on Stephen Fry's version, because we could have spent hours reading different versions of this.
Oh, it's a lovely 20-page chapter. honestly, breathtaking stuff.
Yeah, a lot of effort was put into getting historically accurate. But, you know, we've got a great costume team is putting a lot of effort into doing historically accurate costumes. So that's probably most where we're...
Yeah, that'll be the most...
That's the most slap bang, historically accurate.
Yeah.
bit of the show. But yeah, we just wanted to have fun and have freedom with it and just be a bit silly.
Yeah.
What was I going to say next? I've completely forgotten. you lost me at slap bang, gents.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Well, yeah. There you
lost
go.
Me. No, but it is interesting, though, isn't it? And I think that taking a story that is well known, and I sort of put in a spin, even if it is through the perspective of somebody else, really does, like, you know, it makes it more enjoyable. I think,
I think so, audience.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're just nearing the end of this now. So I will ask you both, what's the next stage? What are we expecting from you guys?
Next stage.
Yeah, there's a pun in there somewhere.
Yeah, I was about to
say. Very clever.
What can we expect from you guys? During the Fringe, after the Fringe, have you got anything that you would like to let us know?
So, obviously, Burning Down the Horse, 2nd to the 27th up in Edinburgh, which is very exciting. We've also got previews on the 18th and 19th of July. Don't know when this will be coming out, but that's over at Apcar Arts in London, so that's very exciting. We'll definitely be a Fringe show next year. We have already got quite a few ideas, and it looks like we're going to stick with the immersive sort of
comedy
things. Because we've just sort of fallen in love with it, and it's given us so much more opportunity. We love improv, we love playing, and it has just sort of opened this new world to us
a little bit. I think we feel like we have a formula now that works, and we can now almost put that formula on many different circumstances and create a similar kind of show, which is what hopefully in the future we kind of want to do.
Yeah. And we're also looking to just keep making art, you know, doing one show a year is not as fulfilling as we'd
love to do more.
And we want to build up this network of people who don't get these opportunities and give them the opportunity, because we, as we say, we've been lucky enough to do this twice now and get other people in, and we know how much fun it can be, so why not try and give that opportunity to as many people as possible? Venture into different realms of theatre, of art, and, you know, we love the immersive stuff, but I don't think that's where we end comedies. We want to be pushing out different stuff, but just making people have the chance to do what they want. But from August, all bets are off. Who knows what's going to be next for Fishing for Chips?
Yeah,
for sure. Listen, Sean and Fred, thank you so much for coming on. It's honestly been a pleasure to speak to you both and to learn all about the show.
It's been a slap bang time.
Yes, yeah. And if you would like a slap bang power hour, then yes,
please,
then I would see the show and and don't take that connotation anywhere else. Now, where can we find you online?
So we're on Instagram at Chip Fishing.
Yeah.
We're on Facebook. That's also at Chip Fishing.
Yeah.
We're on Twitter. Unfortunately, we're at Fishing for Chips.
Yeah, that one's
with
correct.
With no G.
Fishing.
So Fishing for Chips.
Okay. Someone had already taken Fishing for Chips.
Yeah, I believe they're a sort of New Zealand rock band or something like that.
Big shout out to Fishing for Chips there. Thank you so much.
And then, so that's our main socials. Yeah. Find us on the Pleasants website as well if you want to book tickets. We'll probably still have our crowdfunding going as well, but that's on the socials and everything.
Link trees and stuff.
That's us. Please do check us out. And if you are free, come see the show. We're also looking at doing a GoPro show.
Oh, cool.
Where one of our team will have a GoPro on, watch the show. So to make it a bit more immersive, be looking where they're meant to look.
Yeah.
And hopefully we can get that done and get that out.
About that, the GoPro show.
Yeah, the GoPro show. We like rhymes. big Power Hour, GoPro show.
Yes.
So you expect a lot of that in the show. There's a lot of wordplay, a lot of puns.
Yeah, there are.
But some more serious moments as well, don't
I think so.
Yeah, but thank you for having us.
Yeah, it's been really lovely.
It's been a lovely time.
Of course. Thank you very much, gents.
Cheers.
Yeah, see you again, hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, you might see me in Edinburgh. Who knows?
Please,
what happens.
Yeah, we'll sort you out with free ticket.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
That's only for you, not
yes. And it's been recorded, so I hope that's now legally. Thank you. No, honestly, thank you, gents.
Thank you so much. Cheers.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
And that was Sean and Fred from Fishing for Chips. Honestly, as you can tell, the show is going to be a great time. They're great guys. And it's honestly, I think this show is going to be one that you will not want to miss if you're going to Edinburgh and you want to find that new company and have the brag invite to be like, oh, I found them first. You know what I mean? Go and get yourself a ticket. All the relevant information is in our episode description. We have got a Edinburgh Fringe special happening right now. We have a whole host of other artists available to you from a range of genres. This is but one of our many episodes that we will be doing in order to celebrate the Fringe that's coming up. Stick around, take a listen to the new ones, and for the meantime, we'll see you at the next stage.